Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Tata Capital Q1 FY27 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Raghav Garg from Ambit Capital. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good evening, and on behalf of Ambit Capital, I would like to thank the management of Tata Capital for the opportunity to host their 1Q FY27 earnings call. Joining us from the management today, we have Mr. Rajeev Sabharwal, MD and CEO, Mr. Rakesh Bhatia, CFO, and Mr. Sandeep Tripathi, Head of Strategy and Investor Relations. We can now begin with the opening remarks from Mr. Rajeev Sabharwal, and post that, we can open the floor for questions. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Raghav, and thank you, everyone, for joining this call. Let me start with the macro environment. FY26 was a strong year for the Indian economy, with the real GDP growth at 7.7%, among the strongest in recent years, driven by robust domestic consumption and fixed investment. Inflation stayed largely contained through the year, though headline CPI crossed the midpoint of RBI's band for the first time since January 25, coming in at 4.38% in June, led mainly by food prices. We are watching this closely, especially given monsoon trends and rural demand. Credit growth stayed strong through quarter one of FY27. Bank credit growth touched 18.6% in June, a two-year high, with broad-based traction across segments. However, part of this growth reflected funding substitution, as elevated bond yields pushed corporates and NBFCs towards bank borrowings. NBFC credit also accelerated, growing at 14.2% year-on-year in May versus 11.4% a year ago, signaling sustained demand across both bank and non-bank lending channels. MPC held the repo rate steady in June, retained its neutral stance, citing global macro uncertainty. Even though the transmission of last year's rate cuts by banks has moderated in the recent months, bank credit continues to remain a preferred funding avenue for corporates relative to bond markets. Liquidity conditions remained favorable during the quarter, supported by RBI's proactive liquidity management measures. While advance tax outflows led to a temporary liquidity deficit in June, timely RBI interventions helped restore surplus liquidity. Recent measures to encourage foreign currency inflows are expected to further support system liquidity and funding conditions, and we will continue to monitor their impact. Looking ahead, we expect the GDP growth to moderate from FY26's strong base, as elevated energy prices from prolonged geopolitical tensions start to weigh in. That said, the underlying growth environment remains resilient, as high-frequency indicators for quarter one of FY27 continue to point to sustained domestic and industrial activity. We continue to remain watchful on energy prices and geopolitical developments, watching them closely for their impact on inflation and external conditions, and we are also monitoring the impact of El Niño and monsoon-related risks, given the potential effect on food inflation and rural demand. Now, let me turn to the key highlights for the quarter. Quarter one FY27 was a good start to the year and another quarter of healthy growth, stable asset quality, and continued profitability, reflecting disciplined execution across our core businesses. As of June 26, our consolidated AUM stood at 2.91 lakh crores. We have seen a sustained momentum across our core businesses, and the AUM has grown at 28% year-on-year, excluding motor finance business, and 22% including motor finance business. Our consolidated profit after tax for the quarter stood at 1,547 crores, up 56% year-on-year and 3% sequentially. Consolidated ROA stood at 2.3%, and excluding motor finance, it was 2.5%, and consolidated ROE stood at 13.7%. Our housing finance business had a very strong performance trajectory in quarter one of FY27. Our AUM grew 24% year-on-year to reach 89,416 crores, and PAT increased 29% year-on-year to touch 532 crores, reflecting both scale expansion and sustained earnings quality. Our strategic focus on affordable home loans, affordable LAP and prime LAP enabled us to drive margin expansion, portfolio diversification and scale business. Net AUM of affordable housing segment grew by 23% year-on-year. We now operate through a network of about 350 branches, enabling deeper market penetration while maintaining a healthy cost-to-income ratio of 30%. Asset quality continues to be our core strength. Credit costs remain stable at 0.05%, while net NPA stood at 0.3%, positioning us amongst the best-performing players in the housing finance sector. Our ROA in the housing finance business for quarter one stood at 2.5% and ROE at 18.4%, highlighting the strength and sustainability of our earnings profile. Before I deep dive into the operating performance for the quarter, let me share two key developments. First being our proposed acquisition of Yog Loans, which marks an important step in expanding and diversifying our lending franchise. With an AUM of approximately 708 crores as of March 26, a network of 162 branches and nearly 32,000 customers, Yog Loans brings strong expertise in the gold loan segment. Combined with Tata Capital's brand, capital strength, technology and risk management capabilities, this acquisition positions us to capture the significant growth opportunity in secured lending while strengthening our full spectrum financial services platform. Tata Capital will acquire and approximately 88.6% in Yog Loans through a combination of capital infusion and purchase of shares from existing shareholders. The transaction values Yog Loans at a pre-money equity valuation of up to 318 crore and envisages a 93 crore primary capital infusion to support future growth. This transaction is subject to regulatory approvals and customary closing conditions. Refer slides 13 to 15 of our investor presentation. Secondly, Tata Capital has successfully raised $400 million fixed-rate senior unsecured Reg S bond for a 3.5-year tenor at an interest rate of T-bill plus 107 basis points. The bond received strong demand from investors with the final order book oversubscribed by 4 times. The transaction witnessed broad participation from investors in Asia and EMEA, including asset managers, insurance companies, banks, and other institutional investors. We are grateful to global investors for the strong response to our second USD bond issuance. It is our first issuance following our S&P BBB rating upgrade and successful equity listing, and an important step in further diversifying our funding mix and extending our access to international capital markets. Our foreign borrowings now constitute 12.6% of our total borrowings. I will now talk you through our performance across 4 key themes and updates on our digital and AI initiatives. On book growth, I am pleased to share that quarter one saw continued strength in disbursement momentum, with consolidated disbursements rising 33% year-on-year to 46,212 crores, driven by healthy growth across businesses and a 50% year-on-year increase in unsecured retail disbursals. Our combined AUM grew at 22% on a year-on-year basis and 5% sequentially. Excluding motor finance, AUM grew 28% on a year-on-year basis and 6% sequentially. Within this, our housing finance segment continued its strong momentum, delivering a 24% year-on-year AUM growth. Unsecured retail loans also saw a healthy AUM growth of 17% year-on-year. At the same time, our corporate and SME segment continued to scale steadily, reflecting the strength and diversification of our lending portfolio. Our approach in motor finance remains measured, reflecting macroeconomic uncertainties, elevated fuel costs, and a disciplined focus on portfolio quality. As a result, the motor finance book moderated to 24,445 crores as of June 2026. Our core focus remains firmly on retail and SME lending, supported by granular and diversified portfolio. We also continue to selectively participate in high-quality corporate opportunities within a well-diversified risk framework. Our stated vision is to operate with a retail plus SME mix of between 85 to 88%. We have added a slide highlighting the scale up of our high margin products. Please refer to slide 22 in this quarter. In quarter 1 of FY27, disbursements across these products grew 38% Y-on-Y while maintaining a healthy blended IRR. While disbursements growth has outpaced AUM growth, we expect the gap to narrow over the next 2 to 3 quarters as sustained origination momentum translates into book expansion. We continue to maintain a balanced portfolio mix across unsecured retail, affordable housing, secured business loans, supported by steady growth in fee-based business. Our focus on portfolio granularity and mix optimization continues to support margin resilience as we scale the businesses. During the quarter, we added 14 branches, taking our network to 1491 branches across 1,091 locations in 27 states and union territories. Backed by a phygital network, a model of physical reach and digital capabilities, we continue to scale efficiently while serving a growing customer base of 8.8 million across existing and under-penetrated markets. Overall, our growth remains consistent, well-diversified, and anchored in quality. We are confident that our portfolio will remain granular and is well-positioned to remain resilient across business cycles and external shocks, positioning us strongly for the next phase of expansion. The second theme I want to cover is asset quality. Gross Stage 3 assets improved to 1.9% as on June 2026 compared to 2% as on March 2026, while maintaining the PCR at 57%. Even with the ongoing geopolitical uncertainty, our asset quality metrics remains resilient, underscoring the strength of our portfolio, underwriting discipline, and collections infrastructure. Slippages stayed benign across the portfolio, including in unsecured retail. Credit costs charged to the P&L declined 26% year-on-year, primarily driven by the continued improvement in the unsecured retail portfolio. Our credit cost for quarter 1 FY27 stood at 1% in line with FY28 guidance and remains well within the guided corridor. While we continue to closely monitor the evolving geopolitical environment, we have not seen any material stress across our CV and MSME portfolios so far and remain confident in our risk-calibrated approach to sustaining asset quality over the coming quarters. The third theme I want to touch upon today is cost of funds. Our AAA credit rating underpins a well-diversified and stable funding profile. Through a disciplined ALM framework, we continue to optimize our borrowing mix while proactively managing liquidity. In quarter 1, our cost of funds stood at 7.28%, increasing from 7.15% in quarter 4 of FY26. In line with the recent global developments, we have seen a slight uptick in funding costs on incremental borrowings. We continue to proactively manage our liability profile and remain well-positioned to maintain stability in our overall cost of funds going forward. Total borrowing stood at approximately 2.45 lakh crores as of June 26, with a diversified mix across instruments. Bank loans accounted for about 40% of our borrowing, NCDs around 33%, ECB/MTN around 11%, CP and WCDL around 8%. We carry a total liquidity buffer of approximately 29,000 crore and we have ample headroom to pursue growth opportunities and absorb market volatility without compromising on financial discipline. Lastly, on operating leverage, for quarter 1 of FY27, the cost-to-income ratio stood at 36.4%, representing an improvement of 190 basis points over quarter 4 of FY26. Operating expenses grew 2% sequentially and 21% year-on-year. The year-on-year increase was mainly driven by the change in the annual appraisal cycle. Excluding this impact, the operating expense growth would have been approximately 16 to 17%. Our headcount growth remains well-calibrated to business requirements with incremental hiring primarily focused on frontline sales and collection roles. This disciplined approach enables us to support business growth while enhancing productivity and driving operating leverage. As of June 2026, our on-roll employee count stood at 30,170, up only about 5% year-on-year, reflecting a meaningful productivity gains across the organization. The investments we have made over the past few years across technology, data infrastructure, and distribution expansion are now translating into structural improvements in efficiency and scalability. Commenting on our balance sheet remains strong, well-capitalized, providing a solid foundation to support our growth ambitions. As of June 2026, our capital adequacy remains robust at 18.5%, well above the regulatory requirements, and is supported by a strong CET1 ratio, reflecting the underlying strength and resilience of our capital position. On a consolidated basis, our debt-to-equity ratio remains stable at 5.3x as of June 2026, unchanged from March 2026. As of June 2026, our total equity stood at 46,237 crores. Commenting a little bit about our AI initiatives now, at Tata Capital, AI is emerging as a key enabler of our digital-first strategy, helping us enhance customer experience, improve operational efficiency, and strengthen risk management across the lending lifecycle. We have evolved from a point solutions to end-to-end value-accretive, transformative AI-led projects across the organization. Our AI-led transformation journey continues to scale across onboarding, underwriting, operations, servicing, and collections, driving tangible business outcomes. We have seen strong digital adoption across the customer lifecycle. 98% of our customers are onboarded via digital platforms. Our AI-led onboarding initiatives have significantly scaled customer engagement, enabling over 30 lakh customer connects. Today, nearly 90% of our welcome calls are AI-driven, while AI agents contribute about 15% of call center-led personal loan sourcing. AI-generated multilingual creatives account for 85 to 90% of marketing output, strengthening lead generation and customer engagement. In underwriting, our AI-powered document intelligence and CAM automation solutions have processed nearly 4 crore documents and are now adopted across more than 90% of our personal loan and business loan cases, resulting in over 35% improvement in processing turnaround times. Within operations, about 70% of retail applications are processed through AI-led workflows, delivering around 40% productivity gains, nearly 40% improvement in processing turnaround times, and over 25% reduction in operating manpower cost per file. On the servicing front, over 70% of our email responses are now AI-generated. More than 90% of email queries are resolved on the same day, significantly enhancing customer experience while reducing servicing costs. In collections, our AI-assisted bots now manage over 95% of pre-delinquency outreach, improving efficiency and customer engagement. AI-driven early bucket collections constitute around 30% of our recoveries. AI-powered portfolio monitoring enhances risk surveillance across SME customer portfolios, enabling quicker and more targeted actions. We are now focused on building AI capabilities across the organization. Over 12,000 of our employee base has been trained on AI platforms and models, AI platforms and tools, helping create a more scalable, efficient, and future-ready organization. Now about our motor finance business. Our transformation journey continues to progress as planned, with a clear focus on building a more balanced and sustainable portfolio. Amid geopolitical uncertainties during the quarter, we maintained a measured growth approach, resulting in a sequential decline in the book. The portfolio transition remains on track, with net AUM depletion in the legacy business reducing from 3,139 crores in June of 2025 to 945 crores in June of 2026, reflecting a marked moderation in runoff. Asset quality trends remain aligned with our expectations, and business remained profitable in quarter one of FY27. We also continue to expand our presence beyond Tata OEMs while enhancing operating efficiency through branch and workforce rationalization. Concluding, we remain focused on building a larger, stronger, and more resilient franchise through disciplined execution, prudent risk management, and customer-centric innovation. Backed by our diversified portfolio, strong capital position, and expanding digital reach, we are confident of our ability to deliver sustainable growth and long-term stakeholder value. Thank you for your continued trust and support. We would now be happy to take your questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask questions, please press star and one. The first question is from Nishin Chawate from Kota. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. I know you alluded to this in your opening comments, but maybe if we can just walk through slide number 22 and maybe if you can just highlight what you're trying to communicate over here.
Yeah, thanks, Nishin. What we were trying to show here is, if you would remember about 2.5 years back, we had said that, we wanted to be a little conservative because of what's happening in the economy as far as personal loans and other unsecured loans was concerned. At that point of time, we had gone conservative and had slowed down our growth rate. We reached a situation where actually in certain unsecured businesses, our book was degrowing. We saw an improvement in asset quality from quarter one of FY26 because of all the efforts which had been put in over the last 2.5 years or so. And once we saw that, we started scaling up these businesses. But as you know, initially we need to increase our disbursements and the book growth follows because our runoff on the book was higher than the amount which we were disbursing. What we have tried to show here is that our disbursements are growing at a good pace. Like, for example, in quarter one of this year compared to quarter one of last year, our disbursements have grown by 38% and our book has grown by about 10%. If I go back a few quarters, our disbursement growth was lesser and the book growth was even lower. For example, in quarter three of FY26, our disbursement growth was 13% and book growth was 4%, which has now improved to 38% and 10%. What we are also seeing below is that as, you know, our disbursement growth continues to increase, our book growth will catch up with the disbursement growth, which will mean that our proportion of unsecured book in the total portfolio will increase, helping us get to better NIMs and better margins. This is what we are trying to communicate. I hope that clarifies.
Yeah, thanks. So 38% is essentially the disbursement growth of all the seven segments, that you listed over there.
Correct. So if you look at the book growth, it's about 10%. If I exclude the motor finance business, which still will take another quarter or two to start growing, this growth is about 17% if I exclude.
So ideally, this is something which will be margin accretive and kind of, flows into the margins, as the book grows. So now I'm trying to compare this with slide number 19, where we can see that corporate loans growth has also been pretty fast, and in fact the share of corporate loans in the overall mix has been going up. I know you alluded to the fact that retail and SME will be kind of at around 85% of the book. So how should we kind of see an interplay of growth in high yield kind of segments and growth in corporate as well? And going by your opening commentary, can we say that corporate segment has sort of maxed out now?
Nishin, what we had said that our retail and SME will form about 85 to 88% of our book, and we will remain within that corridor. I do agree. Probably we have maxed out on the corporate, and you should see more growth happening on retail and SME. Retail obviously also includes housing for us. The other thing is that in each of these businesses, which I mentioned last time also, that in each of these businesses, our effort is to increase margins. So while we are trying to increase the proportion of high margin products, but even in the other products, whether they are SME products or corporate or other, even, you know, prime home loans, in each of these products, the effort is to increase margins, and we have started seeing an uptick happening there for us. So it's going to be a combination of the proportion of high margin products growing plus margins improving in each of those businesses.
Got it. This clarifies. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Shreya Shivani from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on the quarter. I have two questions. First is on the provision coverage ratio across the product segments. I just wanted to understand for some of the segments, it has picked up a bit over the past couple of quarters. That is personal loan, business loan, even corporate segment, I think even in two-wheelers and construction equipment segment. So any color around have we created any overlays or this is just a function of how our PD-LGDs move? Or have we revised our PD-LGDs? When do we revise it, etc.? Second is on your gold loan book that you've acquired. If you can help us understand going ahead, what will be our strategy for FY27 on that in terms of the new geographies that you'd be expanding into, the kind of offering that you would be, the acquisition has actually come with, the team comes along with it. So what would be the strategy of both of the teams in the gold loan segment?
So Shreya, I'll cover the gold loans and I'll hand over the mic to Rakesh to talk more about the provision coverage ratio.
Yeah.
As far as gold loans is concerned, we have made our application to RBI post the announcement, and we are hoping to get the approval by the end of the calendar year. The business comes with a set of team members who are pretty experienced in this business, and our effort would be to continue to grow that book. We had also ourselves planned to start our business organically, so that that plan will mesh with this new acquisition. That the two plans will mesh with each other. Obviously, the new branches which we will add will be in markets which are growing and markets which are behaving well on credit quality. That's been always our strategy. If I have to put a number to it. We getting all the approvals from RBI, if I have to look into the next 2.5 to 3 years, we expect to add about 500 branches and also grow our portfolio to 4,000 plus crores.
Yeah, thanks, Rajiv. So Shreya, coming back to your question on the PCR. So PCR largely depends on the aging of the assets which are in stage 3. So at Tata Capital, we follow a very prudential provisioning policy where we do incremental provisions as the stage 3 asset ages. So the increase in PCR is primarily on account of the mix of stage 3 assets based on the aging which happens once it hits stage 3 after 90 days. We refresh our ECL grids quarterly. So this change is purely on account of the aging of the stage 3 assets, not material anything a change in TTC, PD or LGDs basically.
But you revise your PD-LGDs quarterly. Did I catch that right?
That's right. We refresh our ECL grids quarterly. For example, when we are doing for Q1, we refresh the data till March to do the calculations through the cycle PD and LGDs.
And what is the how many years do you take into that the calculation of the ECL? 60 months?
Yeah. So it depends product to product. 5 to 7 years. I mean, from the product life cycle
okay.
perspective. And the LGD is historical to date.
Right. So the The point is that your GS3 is probably not moved as much, but in some of the segment, the PCRs are picking up because maybe it is including some time periods which had an elevated PDs. Is that correct? Will that be correct?
No. So just to clarify, Shreya, so what I said was, suppose when an account goes into stage 3, which is 90 days, we do provision as per LGD. Once it ages, we do incremental provisionings and take it to 100% over a period of time. So this mix of stage 3 assets which are aging within the stage 3 causes the PCR to kind of move around 30 to 40 basis point from quarter to quarter. It's purely on account of the mix of the aging of stage 3 assets in a sense.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Understood. That is useful. Thank you and all the best.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Before we take the next question, a request to participants to please limit your questions to two per participant so that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference. For follow-up questions, we request you to rejoin the queue. The next question is from Avinash Singh from MK Global Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening. Thanks for the opportunity. So two questions. The first one is around capital. So yes, we are growing at pretty fast pace, and that is kind of a consuming some bit of capital. Your capital levels are pretty much above regulatory requirement. But what would be your kind of comfort zone as far as Tier 1 is concerned? Is close to 15.5%. Till what level, you are okay to operate and then you would start to look, to raise some capital. So that's one first. The second one, partly, I guess, initially you answered, responded to some kind of, in question. But if you're maxing out in corporate, even if you were to look, in this Q1, typically Q1 corporate used to be weaker, but this time Q1 on a relative basis, corporate loan book has grown strongly. Now, going forward, also there are kind of a space in corporate where because the large banks being very, very conservative or risk averse, there is kind of a reasonable space available in the corporate lending for large scale NBFC or, lenders like you who have a cost of fund advantage. Is this kind of a, the corporate going to grow slower or at least not outgrowing? Is this going to be a consistent strategy or there will be quarters where corporate growth, corporate loan growth can can breach this 15% kind of a mark or so that, the tactical and I would say long-term strategy on the corporate side of it. Thanks.
So let me answer the corporate question and I'll request Rakesh to pitch in for the capital question. As far as, our communication is concerned, I'll repeat what I mentioned just some time back that we expect retail and SME to be between 85 to 88%, which means the balance would be corporate. Now, obviously, there are certain quarters in which we may see better demand for corporate. There will be certain quarters where we will see more demand coming in for housing and other asset classes. So the advantage of being present in all segments is that we can look at where the opportunity arises and tap it. But we are fairly confident that we will maintain retail and SME within the 85 to 88%. If we do originate, more of corporate, we will sell it down and syndicate it. But we will ensure that we keep the retail and SME within the, zone which I have mentioned.
Yeah, thanks, Rajesh. So, Avinash, I'll take your question on the capital. So when we look at our capital planning and the book growth, so there are two broad contours which we keep in mind. As well, you rightly said, the regulatory ratios. So at Tata Capital, our endeavor is always to operate at least 100 to 250 basis point above the mandated thresholds on the capital adequacy in the CET1s. And secondly is the consolidated debt equity ratio. Now, if you look at the current quarter, we're at 5.3x debt equity. If I look forward, we look at a consolidated debt equity of around 6.2 to 6.3. And this comes if you dissect my housing entity, which normally has a debt equity ratio of 7.2 to 7.3x. And within the NBFC, it's between 5.5 to 5.6x. So on a consolidated basis, we look at a debt-equity ratio of around 6.2 to 6.3x. And if I look at the book growth, what we have guided to the street, I think we are well capitalized till June to September of 28.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Abhijit Tibrewal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead. Mr. Abhijit, you may go ahead with the question. There seems to be no response from the line of Mr. Abhijit Tibrewal. We'll move to the next question. The next question is from Viral Shah from IIFL Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Two questions. Just one is if you can call out if at all there was any impact of the calendar number of days on the margin in this quarter, more so on the interest expense part. And second point, Rajiv, you articulated very well that the disbursement growth is basically picking up on the higher yielding and higher margin segments. Directionally, when do you expect this on a book basis, the growth to say, I would say accelerate to a 25% kind of a number? Would it be possible by end of this year? And the second point again on this point is that have we taken any increase in the say SME or corporate book? Have we taken any rate hikes? And if not, then when do we plan to take that? And what could be the kind of reset period over there?
So let me answer the second and third questions before, and I'll request Rakesh to pitch in for the first one. As far as the contribution of high yield products, we expect to be there by quarter three or quarter four of this year, but definitely in this financial year, where our unsecured book will probably grow at a pace which is faster than the overall book growth. The second question on rate hike, actually we have not done any PLR hike for any of the businesses. What we have done is looked at how we can improve margins in our existing businesses. So because our cost of funds is showing an increase, for all our incremental lending, we are looking at doing these deals at a better pricing so that our NIMs increase, which means that you know, margins grow a little more than the cost of fund growth. So that is our strategy. Actually, that strategy is there not only in MSME but in all our businesses. That's the approach we've taken, right from housing to you know, retail to SME to corporate. Regarding the first question.
Yeah, so Viral, I think there's no impact as such on number of days between Q4 and Q1 to your question.
Got it. And just if I may, one more question. Can I just squeeze in one more?
Yeah, go ahead.
On the asset quality front, so the disclosures that you gave with regards to the monthly collection efficiencies, I think pretty much it is holding up across most of the segments. Just wanted to check with regards to the bounce rates, are you seeing any change versus when we last met a month and a half back? Is there any incremental changes over there across any of the segments?
So actually, Viral, on that, we only have good news that our bounce rates continue to improve month on month. That's been the trend, including this current month.
Got it. Got it. Thanks a lot and all the very best.
Thank you so much, Phil.
Thank you. The next question is from Anand Dama from Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, the AUM growth is somewhere about 22-odd%, and you said that the Tata Motors book, which is shrinking at this point of time, should also start reversing from third quarter onwards. Then should we end the year at somewhere about 23-24%? Is that the right way to look at it?
Yeah, another guidance was 23-25%, and we should be on track with that.
Okay. And so secondly, you know, we've been doing microfinance. You know, there are other products that we are doing, but what is the right to win for particularly us in microfinance? Isn't it too risky a book for us to do at this point of time? And if you can just also talk about, like, you just will stick to JLG model, or are you also looking at individual lending model over there?
model is GLG model. That is, you know, would be 99.9% of that. As far as, you know, right to win is concerned, I think it is more about the whole operations of the business. I think in this business, what is very important is to do the right KYC, look at the source of income of the borrowers, ensure that you are there on time with all tools available for digital collections. And that is where we've worked on to make the full process paperless and to ensure that we continue to stay with our good customers and also add new customers. We've also strengthened our process of evaluating the income of the borrowers. And we do believe that this business has an opportunity for us to scale up more. Today it forms less than 1% of our book, so it's not very large. Since we intend growing this as well as our other businesses, we do believe that in the foreseeable future that this will continue to be less than 2% of our book.
Oh, sure. And so the credit card guidance that you've been giving about 1%, do you believe that given the macro conditions and that you are entering into a lot of new spaces, new products, you'll be able to hold on to this credit card guidance?
Yeah, so actually if you look at the new product which you've entered, it's probably more safer than the others, the gold loan business. You know, all indicators on portfolio quality continue to remain strong. So we are fairly confident of keeping the credit costs within the guidance which we have given.
Sure, sir. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Thank you. The next question is from Anuj Singla from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening. Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on a strong set of numbers. So a couple of questions from my side. The first is on margins. So Rajiv, you did call out a couple of initiatives like increasing the unsecured mix as well as higher yields in the existing segment. But also you mentioned in your opening remarks regarding the funding environment being tight. So when we look at the interplay of these two towards the next three quarters, can you give us some color on how do you see the margins evolving maybe towards, versus the 1-2 level, how do we see the margins moving over the next three quarters?
So if you look at, what's happening today and how cost of funds are moving, our belief is this, that in this year, on an overall basis, we may see a cost of fund increase of closer to about 8 to 10 basis points. That is our expectation. As far as, our margins are concerned, we are trying to improve our margins through two methods, as I mentioned to you. One is obviously the fact that you grow your proportion of high-yield products. But the second one is also that in each of the existing businesses, we have identified sub-segments and opportunities to grow our margins there. So we will look at growing our margins yields at a faster pace than our cost of fund increase. So during the current year, we expect margins to improve by about 10 basis points.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's very clear. The second thing is, I think on the on the credit cost side, typically there is some kind of seasonality which we see in 1Q for most of the players. And you've already delivered on your credit cost guidance of 1%. So as we go through the year, do you think you can, deliver much better on a full year basis? Because the starting point itself is very, very benign. So how should we see the trajectory there? It should be much better than what your guidance has been, right? Can we see a number of, let's say, 80 basis points or 90 basis points for the full year?
See, actually, I'll tell you with, the strategy which we are working with. We know that excluding motor finance, we are at an ROA of about 2.5%, and including motor finance, we are at an ROA of about 2.3%. We want to increase this, you know, with every passing year. And we do believe that it will come largely through a combination of operating leverage and margin improvement. And we are working on both of this. More should come from margin improvement, like, for example, 2/3 should come from margin improvement and 1/3 from operating leverage. Whatever comes from further from credit cost will be a bonus. We are not factoring that in. Our effort will be to reduce, but that will be a bonus.
All right. And Mahesh, if I may, I think a commendable job on the turnaround of the Tata, the motors finance portfolio. So can you give us some color on your, let's say, you had a stated objective of 1% ROA. When, is there a change in timeline given the you know, the stellar delivery we have done there? Thank you.
So,
see,
we had given a guidance of reaching a 2% ROA by FY28. And at this point of time, we want to stick to the same objective and plan of doing so, which means that in this year, we will look at, like we became profitable in this business from quarter four of last year. In quarter one also, the motor finance business is profitable, despite some increase, you know, seasonal increase in credit cost. We expect to get to a reasonable ROA. I don't want to give out a number at this point of time, but we want to stay with our stated objective of getting to a 2% ROA by FY28.
Got it. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from Sajal Raj from Zenflow Finance. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. My question on the gold loan business. So the gold loan market is already quite competitive with established players delivering strong growth. What differentiated opportunity do you see for the Tata Capital, and how do you plan to carve out market share despite being a relatively late entrant?
So, Sajal, first of all, you know, all businesses in India are competitive. Actually, I'm yet to find a business which is not competitive. So, I think our advantage lies on few aspects. One, obviously, our brand, which signifies trust. Second, we do believe that our cost of funds gives us an advantage. Third, we have been very strong on technology and operational excellence. And that is what is very important in this business. In fact, if there is one thing which I want to call out at the top of our strategy is basically operational excellence and use of technology, and that is what we will put to full use in this business. And through a combination of that and our brand and cost of funds, we do believe we can scale up well in this business. In this business also, we will follow a similar strategy. We become very confident of, you know, how this business needs to be done, get our hands dirty and get it right, and then start scaling up faster.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from Sonal Gandhi from AMSEC. Please go ahead.
Hey, thank you for taking my questions. So my first question is on disbursement accounting for your mortgage book. So do you do it on, you know, check dispersal or at the clearance? And the second one is on the ECLGS side. So do we expect MSME book to grow a little faster? You know, when you talk about retail plus MSME. Sorry, is my voice here?
What was the second question? Sorry, Sona.
So my second question is on, you know, ECLGS scheme that has come. So should we expect that MSME book will grow faster, you know, as compared to the overall book? And how was your experience, you know, in the earlier ECLGS scheme?
So, one, we take in mortgages, we or any product, we take basically from clearance only, not from disbursal. Second is this, that as far as the ECLGS scheme of the government was concerned, I think the first scheme was very well executed. I should compliment the government for the timeliness of the scheme and also on how they have fulfilled all the promises they had made. The current scheme, we are looking at our customers. We have started, made the product, started disbursing in the same. The initial numbers are small at this point of time, but they are growing with every passing month. But for each of these customers, we do evaluate every case and look at whether this is going to be this, the money which we are lending out to the customer through this scheme is going to be accretive in their business. If yes, we do extend it and we try to make the process very simple for the customer. So that is because, it's our money also, and it's not that everything is going to come from the government. So we do evaluate each case.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Abhijit Tibrewal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, operator, am I audible now?
Yes, sir. We can hear you. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sorry for the last time. I think there was some technical difficulties. Good evening, everyone. Rajesh, so firstly on the OPEX, in the opening remarks, I think you mentioned a cost income ratio of 36.4, which is a good sequential improvement. But there, there's also that component of your non-interest income, basically net gain on fair value changes, which I mentioned, which are investments on investments in mutual funds. So to that extent, if I look at the YOY growth in OPEX today, it's still at 21% versus, let's say, an overall AUM growth of 22% for us. So, and this is on the back of stronger growth that we are seeing in corporate, stronger growth that we are seeing in SME, which I'm assuming are inherently lower OPEX businesses, lower in margin and lower OPEX businesses as well. So when do you think this OPEX growth that we are seeing at 21% right now is lower than the AUM growth? So you remember you just mentioned that the ROA improvement, two-thirds of it will come from operating leverage and one-third from margin expansion. So when can we start seeing this stronger operating leverage or OPEX improvement?
Yeah, so this is Rakesh. I'll take your question. So I think, as Rajiv mentioned in his script, in the opening remarks, that, Q1 to Q1 is not comparable because we have changed our appraisal cycle. To that extent, you see a growth of OPEX by 21%. If we normalize for that, the Y&Y growth will stand at 16%, not 21%, what you alluded to. And as Rajiv alluded, that we have been investing on AI and digital initiatives across our underwriting collections and sales. We see the benefits accruing every quarter, and going forward, you will see this costing ratio coming down. And we've guided that by FY28, we'll be at 33 to 34% on costing ratio. And as Rajiv mentioned, that from the current ROA of 2.3% to the guided ROA of 2.6, two-thirds will come from the margins, and one-third will come from the OPEX optimization, which will happen.
So two-thirds from margin expansion and one-third coming from OPEX.
That's right.
Got it. That's useful. Thanks for that clarification. And Rakesh, again, the other thing is on the cost of borrowings. I think Rajesh had mentioned earlier we are expecting a 8 to 10 basis points increase in the cost of borrowings this year. So does that assume that, the cost of borrowings will be higher in the first half and then the lower in the second half? Just trying to understand. Are you already seeing some signs of that? Because the last quarter, basically, was very, very volatile, whether it was bank borrowings, whether it was debt market borrowings. I think everywhere, wherever you borrowed, the costs were high. So have you seen anything in the last one and a half months which is giving that confidence that maybe second half borrowing costs should trend lower?
As you rightly said, the first half of or last week of March and first of April was quite volatile. Things have settled now, and whatever incremental borrowings are happening, we are able to kind of judge the rates. And as Rajiv mentioned, across all businesses, we are increasing our disbursal IRRs to make sure that we protect the margin. So we don't see that anything on the cost of fund which can disturb our margin expansion story, and we'll grow the book in a calibrated way, and it will be guided as per the margin which we quoted on the call.
So just to add, you know, I don't think so there is any upfronting or otherwise. If you look on a daily average basis, what will happen is whatever is coming due for repayment, when you are raising fresh money is there, they are coming at a slightly higher cost than what they were coming at a year back or 2 years back. So that is a change. So when I am telling you 8 to 10 basis points, this is basically an average increase for the year calculated on a daily average basis.
Yeah. Got it, sir. That's useful. And the last question I had was on the motor financing business. For the last 3 quarters, the disbursement mix that you put out on slide 34, the use proportion is around 40%. So, I mean, I've been finding some resistance there in terms of the market, the competition, or is it just temporary? And I think one of the points that you mentioned on the same slide is the price difference between new and used vehicles have narrowed after the GST rate rationalization. So just trying to understand your thoughts around the used proportion in the mix. Does that inch up from here after stabilizing for some time? Or this is like the max that we have from the used business?
So our strategy there is to keep used at about 40-42% in that range. As far as the mix between HCV and ILM SCV will change. The proportion of ILM SCV will increase and the proportion of HCV will reduce.
Also, other OEM options.
Yeah, so that is what will happen. So that is one because of mix. The second thing which we are seeing is that in each of these segments also we have increased the rates and we will get better yields from each one of them. So a combination of better yield from each one of them and the mix change is what will get us better margins.
Just in the new, we are also looking at non-data.
Yeah.
Got it. And just one last clarification. After we receive RBI approval for the acquisition that we have done in gold financing, as you mentioned on the slide, this will be a subsidiary of Tata Capital. So after that, any plans of renaming, rebranding it, or will gold loans be continue to be offered under the brand of EOB loans?
So actually speaking, the moment we get the approvals for it to become our subsidiary, it will become a Tata Capital company, and that is what it will be known by. As far as the long-term plan is concerned, we will finally consolidate this within Tata Capital.
Got it. That's very useful. Thank you so much, sir, for answering all my questions, and I wish you more team the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vijay.
Thank you. Next question is from Vijay Sharma from Lakshmi Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the question. So on slide 22, sir, you have mentioned...
Vijay, we can't really hear you very clearly. If you're on a hands-free, request you to use the handset.
Am I audible now?
Yeah, better.
So on the slide 22 where we have mentioned affordable and micro and LAP, so that is referring to the affordable housing and micro housing?
Yes.
So the rates that we have mentioned for affordable and micro, so affordable specifically 11 and 12, so which is slightly lower than what the listed peers are there in the affordable housing space. So is this a conscious decision taken by us leveraging the lower cost of borrowing? Is that the way to think about it?
So, Vijay, there are players who operate at even lower than this, and there are players who operate at slightly higher than this. I think our approach is to get the customers of the credit profile we are comfortable with, which do not give much of delinquency, and that's the reason we have chosen this segment. So, we obviously have the advantage of cost of funds, which helps us get to a better ROA, but it is also a choice of the nature of credit we want. Within this micro gives us a better yield, and in terms of our growth of business, while we are growing both of them, we will be growing the micro more than we will be growing the affordable in terms of growth rate.
Yeah, I mean, that the micro is evident. I mean, QOQ, there is a 14% increase, and that has increased quite faster. But on an overall basis, because, I mean, if this is like, as you mentioned that in the 22nd slide, that it is a high margin business and therefore you want to scale that. Because the ticket size also that is mentioned in slide 30, 18 lakh is approximately slightly higher, not almost equivalent to the listed players in the affordable segment, but the rate was slightly lower. So that was just a clarification. in the micro housing, but is the ticket size then significantly lower than 18 lakhs, or what would be the then? Because if you are saying interest
yield
is at 15 to 16.
It's half of that, about 9 lakhs.
Okay. Understood. So what would be as a percentage of the total book, or maybe of the Tata housing book, that you would be targeting this to take, say, 2 years down the line, or is there an AUM or numerical target where would this whole book of, which is at approximately 17,000, to say 2 years or 3 years down the line?
Yeah, so this is Sarosh here. Currently this book is around 1,200 crores. We plan to grow it by 100% for this financial year, maybe another 50% to 60% in the subsequent year. So that will be our growth plans for the AUM growth for the micro housing group
combined.
And the affordable?
And combined, we will be growing at closer to around 30% in this segment, between affordable and micro.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Viral Shah from IIFL Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity to allow me to get me back for the questions. Just one clarification I wanted, Rajiv. You highlighted with regards to the NIMS that you expect a 10 bps kind of an increase in NIMS from here on. So is this basically on a full year basis or basically from, say, 1Q level that we are at? And secondly, does this factor in any benefit that we may get from, say, the potential repo rate hike if it happens, given that we would be a net beneficiary with a 70% kind of a floating rate book?
So, on floating rate, things are clear that in case the rates increase, we will pass on the increase. If they drop, we will obviously pass on the drop in our cost of funds. So we are targeting a 10 basis point NIM increase for the whole year.
Okay, and this does not, you are not baking in any policy rate actions in your guidance, right?
So we are saying that policy rates will be neutral to them. In case they drop, we will pass on. In case they go up, we will increase.
Got it.
Because of the mix, we get any benefits, again, we will enjoy that benefit.
But isn't that typically somewhat of a lead lag effect that you typically see, right? If there is a policy rate hike, of course, you will be repricing the book, whereas your cost of funds will take time for it to inch up to the extent of the policy hike. So just I was reflecting on that.
You're right, Viral, on that point. It's just that, it's very difficult to pencil in an increase when you don't know whether it's going to happen or not, or how much increase will happen. So since that has not happened, we have not penciled in that in our calculations.
And Viral, just to supplement the other thing on our bank loans, we have moved away from MCLR to repo and T-bills largely. And our assets on the asset side, all our floating loans are linked to our PLRs basically. So to that extent, we time it and we make sure that there's no negative drag which comes on this.
Got it. That clarifies a lot. And just a second clarification, Raju, I just wanted. On the OPEX front, you did call out that adjusted for the appraisal cycle change, it was a 16% kind of an increase. What is the kind of, operating leverage that we anticipate, I would say, for this year? I know you have given F28 guidance. And if you could give that on more on, say, the cost to asset basis, that will be quite helpful.
I think for, as Raji mentioned, from here to FY28, the incremental ROA delta will come one-third from OPEX VRL and two-third from the margins. From here on till for the year end, I think it will be like 3 to 4 bips which will come on the OPEX as we look at reducing cost income sequentially.
Got it. That's very clear. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. That was the last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management team for any closing comments.
Thank you so much. I think the year has started off very well with the first quarter. If you ask me, usually we do not see such a good first quarter. It's been good on all aspects, on growth, on operating leverage, on credit costs. I think on all fronts it's been a very good quarter. And a good quarter is helpful in many ways because that book, if you can are able to create a good book growth on in quarter one, that remains with you for the whole year. So, you know, it is accretive on the income side. The second thing, I think we have started seeing a very good, you know, advantage from the deployment of AI in a number of projects which we have done. We have this time tried to list out the benefits which we are getting in our investor presentation. We also believe that the addition of gold loans is the right product which will help us in both on the growth side as well as on the margin side. With things looking very good on all segments, you know, housing, retail, SME and corporate, we are fairly, you know, I would say optimistic on, you know, meeting our guidance which we have given to the market. We'd like to thank all of you for all the support which you've given us. I'd also like to thank a lot of you who, when you meet us, tell us what more we can do and how we can become better. All of this is beneficial to us. And I'd like to thank Ambit for arranging this call and everyone here for joining in and supporting us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Tata Capital, that concludes the conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.